This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
We have covered a lot of dark territory on this show, but this moment, this was different. This was bone deep. Cousin Brian Koberger stood up in the courtroom, hands stiff at his sides, dead-eyed, emotionless. And look, I'm going to say it because no one else has. I think he had a hard on. Yeah. Add that to the fucking sick mix of all this. And confessed to murdering four innocent college students. It wasn't a breakdown. It wasn't remorse. It wasn't even really a plea. It was a performance. And the vibe, absolutely chilling. That's the thing about evil that hides in plain sight. It doesn't always announce itself with fireworks. Sometimes it shows up in a courtroom wearing khakis, speaking softly and saying, "Yes, I did it." Like he's ordering off a fast food menu. No hesitation, no pain, just cold, methodical, mechanical confirmation. And it left the room frozen. In this episode, I'm going to sit down with defense attorney Bob Motto, someone who's been inside the system, represented the worst of the worst, and knows the weight of someone like this better than anyone. We break down not just the courtroom scene, but what comes next. The sentencing hearing that's now looming, July 23rd. Will Koberger speak again? Will he pull a BTK-style confession and revel in the retelling? Or will he stay silent, soaking in the infamy he's already secured? And let's talk about that, because for someone like Koberger, prison might not feel like punishment. The box might feel like home. There's no guarantee this man feels isolation the way we would. No guarantee he processes justice, pain, or loss like any normal human being. And that's the unsettling question we circle around. What is justice for someone who may not be capable of feeling guilt? I want to hear your thoughts in the comments section. Please do leave it on YouTube. Press subscribe wherever you're listening to us. This episode isn't just about a plea. It's about what we do when our justice system gives someone exactly what they wanted, and whether the families and the rest of us are left holding the emotional bill. Let's get into it, starting with Bob's reaction to that moment in that courtroom, and let's be honest, none of us will ever unsee. Would you have trusted a jury with this case at the end of the day to get it right? Yes. Really?
Yes.
Yeah. You'd have been confident.
I think juries get it right most of the time. And I've said it once and I'll say it a million times. That fucking sheath is just smoking gun evidence.
Yeah.
There is no explanation in the world as to why that sheath with his DNA was found under the girls. Yeah. None.
No.
No, like no one's buying any kind of bullshit they would have tried to cook up. No jury's buying it.
No
jury's buying it ever. So yes, I 100% would have trusted. Like, I don't think that's the thing. I know people are saying that, oh, the prosecution didn't have the balls to bring. I don't think that's it. I really don't. I think that there's a lot of things to take into consideration. That small county just saved the taxpayers millions and millions of dollars, because it's not just for the trial. It's for the entire appellate process that takes place after. It has to get paid for by the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. It goes on forever.
Yeah.
For up to two decades or more.
Yeah.
You know, before this guy's executed, he might have died of natural causes before they were able to stick him in front of a firing squad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that part of it has to be taken into consideration. It's just how the legal process works. The wheels of justice turn very, very slowly. And when you take into consideration all of the factors, the money side of it, the humanity side of it, because when you listen to Maddie Mogan's father and you read his statement, he has a very different view.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fascinating to look at it, because we're all human beings. We all process grief and trauma differently. We're not the same. None of us are the same. And, you know, for him, he felt the relief. And you know what? That fucking psychopath stood up in court and said I did these things.
I want to get to that. And you're right. Both of them made very compelling statements, and they're both right in their own sense, because yeah. it's an
there
individual.
There is no wrong thing. Answer there. There is no wrong opinion
yeah.
on that.
I heard both of them, like, I hear you. I can see completely both ways.
And totally.
It's just, yeah. Let's talk about the moment in court where he stood up. Didn't even really need to stand up other than to be sworn in. But that was a creepy moment for me, because Ann Taylor, she did her thing. She stood up, did her thing to the judge. And then it was time. Koberger, he was fidgeting. He was like a third grader waiting to stand up. And as I've said, get his participation trophy. And he just couldn't wait. And he stood up without even being asked. And the judge is like, well, while you're up, we'll swear you in, but you can sit down. You're like, you don't need to. I appreciate the respect. I don't think it was an offer of respect on Koberger's part. I think it was Koberger in his own weird sense of, this is the moment I'm about to bask in. And the judge kind of shut that down, like, sit your ass down. But that was weird. Like, it felt like he was really, it wasn't a, you know, shit, I got to say yes. And all. It was like, yes. Like, I am telling you, I did this. What was your take on Koberger's demeanor in that moment of admitting his guilt, name by name, charge by charge?
The one word that I came up with during my live, which I think is the perfect word for it, is chilling.
Yeah.
It was fucking chilling to watch it. I had goosebumps in the worst type of way, goosebumps from watching it, because we just don't see that.
No.
You don't see it, Tony. Like, you don't see it, dude. Like, and it goes to everything that we've been saying about his mindset and his personality and where he's at mentally with this thing. It was chilling to the bone, man. Yeah. Like, it was like, this was a killer who just stood up without an ounce of remorse. And we'll see during sentencing, mm-hmm. he's going to have the opportunity to say something. Like, that's going to be fucking fascinating to see if he's going to say something and what he's going to say, you know, and it's going to be probably one of the most devastating things that we're ever going to watch is those families get up there and get to say their piece as to how this man destroyed the fabric of their lives in a way that's so fucking profound that it's like, it's hard to imagine. It's unimaginable, really.
That's going to be a really tough one to listen
to. Oh, dude, I'm going to be crying like a fucking baby. Yeah. Like, Gary, like, one of the most powerful things that I've seen, like, when you watch these victim impact statements from, like, the school shootings and the aftermath of that, man, like, when I watched, what's his face? The kid who they charged the parents, like, my mind, I covered it. I can't believe I killed the kid where they charged the two parents. They were the first chair. Like, what's his name?
I know what you're talking about. I can picture the kid.
It'll come to me as I'm speaking. It's my age. But when I watched those victim impact statements, man, and it was like, it was one after another, and it was family and it was friends. And it was like the eloquence of some of those kids that stood up and explained how it impacted them was some of the most powerful words I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I imagine that day on July 23rd is going to be a lot like that. And you're going to hear it all.
Yeah.
You're going to hear just rage. You're going to hear absolute sorrow, the deepest sorrow. I mean, it's like, and it's so important for us to hear that because it makes it real to us, because it's one thing to sit and watch shit on a TV, but to have even an inkling of what that might feel like if it were your family that was impacted is important for all of us. And it really, it kind of puts into focus, you know, just how devastating these cases really are.
Yeah. It's going to be something to watch. They didn't make it a requirement in the plea deal that he had to say anything at all. So he may not say a word. I think a lot of us are, our mind are going back to BTK when he did a very similar thing to this right before trial, saying, yep, I'm going to plea. And then stood there for 45 minutes and methodically laid out everything he did for all those years. I wonder if we are going to see something like that here, or if this is, you know, they're very different cases. BTK was active for decades. Koberger, this, as far as we know, was his first run at a horrible, horrible thing. So BTK, I think, had a level of the grandiose and was proud of his years of evil. Koberger had a little sliver of evil in his life that did a lot of damage in a very short period of time. So I'm wondering if he's going to have the gumption to stand up and say what he did. If he wants to, if he will, if that's like a moment of joy for him, of being able to express that, or if it's he's just going to stand silent like he did when they asked him, you know, did you do this? Guilty, not guilty.
That's not when that happens. So that statement of allocution the defendant can give is typically at sentencing.
I know he wouldn't do it back then by any means, but I'm just saying.
I know exactly what you're saying. I just wanted to be clear that the time for pleading is exactly what they did, which is pleading factual basis by the state.
I know.
When we get to the sentencing, that's when we get that question answered.
Sure.
Will he give a statement? Will he turn around to the families and apologize, or will he stand up and
just listen.
Say nothing, yeah. man? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if our theme is correct, if what we think about this guy is correct,
yeah.
I'd be stunned if he doesn't say something. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate that he's going to turn around and show any empathy to the families. I'd be stunned if he did that. Because, I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. This guy's broken. Man, yeah. Like he's not normal. He's not a normal person. There's something just
does he want people to know
damaged in his mind, man.
Does he want people to know his secrets, quote unquote, you know, or is that, does he want to have some of this still in the vest? I mean, almost like BTK till, I mean, he's not dead yet, but he's on death's door, you know, up until now, he's still like doing little riddles here and there because he wants to have people look at him in infamy and wonder what else you got. The fact that Koberger's been called out on everything, going, look at all the dumb things you did in this case. I don't know. It's a weird look into a mind that none of us are ever truly going to understand.
Yeah. And I have to think, I mean, he doesn't ever want to become irrelevant.
No.
You know, like I firmly believe that. I really, it's like, hearing that when Huerman got snatched up, that him and BTK became pen pals, you know, like talking about prison food and what it's like. I think that, and I will not be shocked when we come to find out that other monsters have now accepted him into their fraternity of evil.
I guess and
they're pen paling each other and writing each other. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, man. I mean, it's like, I want to hear what I want to hear being said to the families. I really don't give a fuck about the rest of what he has to say.
Yeah.
The only thing that I care about hearing is some kind of remorse, which I know he doesn't feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's not like, capable of it. That's the thing.
Yeah, right. He doesn't live in him.
Even if he wanted to feel it, he can't. And I think he knows
exactly
that. And that's the, no matter how much we want that, it's not that. The analogy I make is like, it's like saying to someone who's blind, well, just look, read a little closer. Like, you
right.
can, I'm blind. No, just look at the text. Just write, let
right.
me blow it up for you. They can't see.
Can't see.
It's just not
can't
there.
Can't see. It's not, it doesn't exist.
It's a sense that doesn't exist.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, all we know is that if he were to do that, we'd all be talking about how disingenuous it appeared. You know what I mean?
Because so it would like, be. Yeah. It would be, emulating behavior.
Yeah. It's but people have a morbid curiosity. Like we all want to try to understand why.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those questions that, short of AI figuring it out.
Sometimes there just is no why. There just is no why. So here we are. Brian Koberger has confessed to the unthinkable, and yet it feels like the story is far from over, because while the legal boxes are checked, the emotional ones, they're still gaping wide open. There's no closure for the families, no real answers for the rest of us. Just a man who stood up in court, owned the worst thing imaginable, and sat back down like he'd just finished reciting a menu. Bob said it best. This wasn't cathartic. It was chilling. And the most unsettling part, Koberger looked comfortable, like this moment wasn't the breakdown of control, but a reclaiming of it. After years of strategy, motions, failed defenses, and media obsession, he finally got to say the words on his terms, in his way, with all eyes on him. And as we move forward toward sentencing, the biggest question isn't just whether Koberger will speak again, it's whether we want him to. Because let's be real, if he doesn't talk, or if he does talk, it won't be to comfort the families or take responsibility. It'll be to control the narrative, to stay in the spotlight, to feed whatever fractured thing inside him needed to kill in the first place. It's where the justice system hits a wall. Because we can lock him up, take away his freedom, remove him from society, but we can't stop the attention. We can't make him irrelevant. And for someone like Koberger, that might be the only thing that never mattered. Not freedom, not remorse, just infamy. And maybe that's the hardest part for the families, not just the loss, not just the horror, but knowing the man who took everything from them may never feel a second of regret, and worse, may enjoy what's coming next. So we watch, we listen, and we brace ourselves for sentencing, because if Koberger speaks again, it won't be for them. It won't be for us. It'll be for him and him alone. We'll be here to cover every word. And if he stays silent, that'll speak volumes too. Tell me in the comment sections what your thoughts are on this case, where it stands, on our conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You do that on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and you'll find us there. Press subscribe if you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is, so you don't miss any of our coverage on the cases that we cover for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.